Please open your Bibles this evening to Psalm chapter 16, to Psalm 16. And we're going to use it as our beginning place and staying place. We'll pretty much be in this psalm this evening as we look at one of the psalms in our study of the book of Psalms on Wednesday evening. We've looked at several different psalms, and this is one of the psalms that is not included in our book, and yet it's a well-known psalm. It's a messianic psalm. It's quoted in the New Testament a couple of places. And I believe as we look at it this evening, we will learn that there are some things that we can gain from it and that we can learn from it as David speaks really in the mouth of the Messiah. But as we will notice, it's not only true, much of it is not only things that are said that were true of the Messiah, could have been said by David and should be said by us as we think about the application to this psalm. Let's begin by reading it, and then we will go from there. Psalm chapter 16. I'm reading from the American Standard Version. Preserve me, O God, for in thee do I take refuge. O my soul, thou hast said unto Jehovah, thou art my Lord. I have no good beyond thee. As for the saints that are in the earth, they are the excellent in whom is all my delight. Their sorrows shall be multiplied that give gifts to another god. Their drink offerings of blood will I not offer, nor take their names upon my lips. Jehovah is the portion of mine inheritance and my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. The lines are fallen unto me in pleasant places. Yea, I have a goodly inheritance. I will bless Jehovah, who hath given me counsel. Yea, my heart instructeth me in the night seasons. I have set Jehovah always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoiceth. My flesh shall also dwell in hope. For thou shalt not leave thy soul into Sheol, neither will thou suffer thy Holy One to see corruption. Thou hast shown me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. In thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. You will recognize probably immediately that a couple of the verses, three or four of the verses in this psalm, are quoted by Peter in Acts chapter 2. As he talks about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. The psalm is clearly messianic because Peter tells us so. There are times in which sometimes when we look at the psalms or we look at passages from the Old Testament and we wonder in some of the prophets whether there is messianic connection or not. And sometimes writers debate about that and don't know for sure. But in a case where an inspired apostle tells us that something is messianic, of course, that removes all doubt. Go ahead and turn over to Acts chapter 2, and let's notice the usage of it there. But for the majority of our time this evening, I want to come back and look at the psalm and look at some practical things I think that we can learn from the psalm, even though it's messianic. In that sense, even though David was putting these words, saying these words, but I think saying words that would be true of the Messiah and the things that the Messiah could or would say. And certainly they could apply in many ways to David in his life. They can also apply in our lives. But look at Acts chapter 2, and we'll notice in Acts chapter 2 at least the use of this and how Peter uses it. Of course, in the book of Acts chapter 2, we see the birthday of the church, Pentecost, the beginning of the preaching of the gospel of Christ. And the Holy Spirit fell upon the apostles, and they began to speak in tongue, and there were these tongues of fire upon their head, and there were sounds of a rushing of mighty wind, and all of this caused and brought the attention of the multitudes, and they came together, and Peter and the apostles began to preach unto them, and Peter begins by quoting from Joel, in essence, in saying to them that these men are not drunken as ye suppose. It's only the third hour of the day, but this is that which was spoken through Joel the prophet. and quotes from Joel chapter 2 to remind them or to point them to the fact that this is the fulfillment of God's promise that the Spirit of God would fall upon his people. And then Peter in verse 22 begins to preach about Jesus. "Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God unto you by mighty works and wonders and signs, which God did even by him in the midst of you, even as ye yourselves know, him being delivered up by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye by the hand of lawless men did crucify and slay, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it." And so Peter begins to preach, along with the other 12, undoubtedly they were all preaching. Peter's is recorded for us. But Peter is preaching, and Peter is preaching about Jesus, Jesus of Nazareth, a man who was approved unto God, he says, by mighty works and wonders and signs which God did in the midst of you. They were familiar. They had known these things. These things that clearly had happened in their midst. In the past 3 years during the ministry of Jesus, everyone had been talking about them. And so mighty works and signs and wonders had been done in their midst. This man being delivered up by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God. That's a reminder that God was behind this. Yes, he was delivered up by their hands, but he was also delivered up by the determined counsel and foreknowledge of God. God knew about this. God pre-planned it. God predetermined it. "Ye by the hand of lawless men did crucify and slay, but God raised him up." God raised him up, having loosed the pangs of death, because it was not possible that he should beholden of it. And so Peter begins to preach about the resurrection. And one of the first things he says, of course, is he quotes from this psalm in Psalm chapter 16, verses 8 through 11. "For David said concerning him." David writing the psalm, we see back in Psalm chapter 16 in the inscription that it says it's a psalm of David. And Peter verifies that, and Peter says that David, so again, we get the verification here, David certainly was the author of this psalm. "For David said concerning him, I behold the Lord always before my face. He is at my right hand that I should not be moved. Therefore my heart was glad and my tongue rejoiced. Moreover, my flesh shall dwell in hope, because thou wilt not leave my soul into Hades, nor wilt thou give thy Holy One to see corruption. Thou hast made known unto me the ways of life. Thou hast made me full of gladness with thy countenance. Brethren, I say to you freely of the patriarch David, that he both died and was buried, and his tomb is with us to this day, being therefore a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that of the fruit of his loins he would set one upon his throne, he foreseeing this spoke of the resurrection of Christ, that neither was he left unto Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption. This Jesus did God raise up, whereof we are all witnesses." Clearly, Peter focuses on that one verse, that verse 27 here in Acts chapter 2. It is in verse 10 of chapter 16 of the book of Psalms. And he doesn't really speak to the other verses, I don't think, in particular. But to this verse specifically in verse 27, "Thou wilt not leave my soul unto Hades, neither wilt thou give thy Holy One to see corruption." Whoever is speaking in the psalm, he is saying to Jehovah God, he is praising Jehovah God, he is thanking Jehovah God, as we'll see as we step back and take a look at the whole psalm. But he is saying to him that you will not leave my soul unto Hades. What is Hades? Hades is the unseen place, the place where departed spirits go. Jesus said to the thief on the cross, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." The King James Version translates it, "Thou will not leave my soul unto hell," misguiding people into thinking that Jesus went to the place of torment. Jesus did not go to Gehenna. Jesus did not go to a place of torment after he died. He went to paradise. He told the thief, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." But the word that is used here is the word Hades. "You will not leave my soul into Hades." Hades in the New Testament is the word Sheol in the Old Testament. And sometimes it just clearly means the grave or the place of the unseen. Jesus would go, his soul would go into Hades. He would go to paradise. But his body was put in the tomb. Both of those things are spoken of here in verse 27. You will not leave my soul unto Hades, nor will you give your Holy One to see corruption. The body would not be corrupted. Clearly, this is a statement of resurrection. The body would not be corrupted. It doesn't take long for the body to begin to corrupt, to go to the grave, and to begin to decay. But the writer says, Peter, quoting from Psalm, says, "Thou wilt not leave my soul in Hades, and you will not give your Holy One to see corruption." How could that be true of anyone besides the Messiah? It can't be. And Peter says, "Brethren, I say to you freely of the patriarch David, he both died and buried, and his tomb is with us today." Peter's reminding them this is not true of David. There was a Jewish fable that said David's body was never corrupted. I don't know if that was a fable at that time or not, but it's been said by others that in Jewish history, I'm not sure when it originated, there was a fable that David's body never corrupted. That God took him. Well, that's just not the case. Peter says that David died and was buried, and his tomb is with us to this day. But being a prophet and knowing that God had sworn with him to an oath that he would set one upon his throne, that's a reference to 2 Samuel 7, when God told David that one from his lineage would sit upon his throne. Knowing that one would rule and would reign upon his throne, he understanding that, a reference to a different passage, but David understanding that, he spoke of the resurrection of the Christ. That his soul would not be left into Hades, neither would his flesh see corruption. That's exactly what the prophet is talking about in the psalm in Psalm 16. And so Peter nails it for us. Peter just explains it to us. That this reference in this psalm is not talking about David dying because David went to corruption, but it's talking about the Messiah. That the Messiah would be raised from the dead. And he references that, he explains that, and then he goes on to say, "And we are witnesses. This Jesus whom ye crucified fulfills this." David could not fulfill it. No other man could fulfill it. But the Messiah could, and the Messiah did. Jesus is the one. It's a tight package. He rolled up that package tightly. They couldn't escape it. And that's why 3,000 who had good and honest hearts obeyed and were baptized that first day. Well, let's go back to Psalm 16 and look at it more specifically. And the overhead tonight, the transparency, it's not a transparency or an overhead, it's a screen. I can't get away from the old language I used for many, many years. The overhead projector is gone. It's now, the overhead projector is in the museum of ancient audiovisual materials. This is now a projector and a PowerPoint. On the PowerPoint, it's going to be very simple tonight from Psalm 16. I just simply want to make 3 points. And the 3 points are, God is my refuge. God is my portion. God is my hope. From these 3 points, and there's the first one, God is my refuge. As we said in this passage, clearly it's messianic. And I think as we read it, we can see that every single verse, every single word of this psalm could have been said by Jesus. And really, refers to him because it's a messianic psalm. Now, many of the verses in there could apply to David and could apply to us. I hope it will apply to David and apply to us as we think about it. Because what Jesus says here, as he talks about, or as the Messiah speaks here, what he says are the same sentiments that we should express. When he talks about God being our refuge. So we will start there as we think about the fact that God is our refuge and God is our strength. We've already seen in our study of the book of Psalms, some of the Psalms, many of the Psalms refer to this, of God being our refuge, or God being our rock, God being our fortress, like a mighty fortress, like a city set on a hill, a strong tower. And of course, that vision, what that visualizes to us is that just as the ancients, the people that lived out in the communities round about a city, and they lived out in the pasture lands and would farm the pasture lands. But if the enemy was coming, they would run to the refuge. They would run to the city with the walls of the city. and with the high towers and with the military people behind those walls ready to fight off the enemy. God is our refuge. He is our strength. And when the enemy comes, we need to take refuge in Him. And there are just so many passages in the New Testament that remind us of that as we think about Paul in Ephesians chapter 6. As he talks about, put on the whole armor of God. Who is our protection? Jehovah God is. His word is that we put on His word. We take in His word. We put on the strength which He supplies. And so God is our refuge. God is our rock. God is the one that we are to trust in. God is the one who has made life possible for us. Jesus trusted in His Father. Look over at Matthew chapter 26. Look at Matthew chapter 26. And you will recognize this immediately, of course, as the night of Jesus in the garden. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 38 and 39, Jesus said, "Then He said to them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Abide ye here and watch with Me, He said to the disciples. And He went a little further, and fell on His face and prayed, saying, My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass away from Me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as Thou will." Here in the most difficult hour of His life, even though He knew it was coming, this is the reason that He had come into the world. This is the reason that He had come and taken on flesh and blood. To come to this hour of trial, and then the next day this hour of death, giving Himself upon the cross, as we talked about this morning, for the sins of mankind, for the redemption that we did not deserve. He came to this hour. He said, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful." Can we even begin to imagine the sorrows and the struggles and the trials that Jesus went through that night? Luke says He sweat as drops of blood. But He fled to His God. He fled to His God. Here in this psalm, he says, "Preserve me, O God, for in Thee do I take refuge. O my soul, Thou hast said unto Jehovah, Thou art my Lord. I have no good beyond Thee." You think about that for a moment. I have no good beyond You. That was the Messiah's attitude towards His God. That should be our attitude towards our God. The NIV translates it, "Apart from You, I have no good thing." The New American Standard says, "I have no good beside You." The ESV says, "No good apart from You." We have nothing. Without God, we have nothing. Have we come to that understanding? The people of the world do not understand. God is our only refuge. God is our only hope. And there is nothing in this world that is good except for God in a relationship with His Son, Jesus Christ. And the world doesn't begin to understand. And I'm afraid that sometimes we don't understand. I'm afraid that sometimes even God's people haven't come to grips with this idea that only in God is their hope. Only is there God, is there anything good. He says, "Thou art my Lord, I have no good beyond Thee. I have no good things besides You. Apart from You, I don't have anything." Is that the way we feel? Is that the way we think? Are we so consumed with the things of this world? Are we so consumed with the things of this life? In the making of money, in the making of plans, in the making of joys here that are only temporary and will only last for a few moments? Have we really come to grips with that idea that there is no good besides Jehovah God? And then he says in verse 3, "As for the saints in the land, they are the excellent ones in whom is all my delight." I think that was a statement on the lips of the Messiah. He trusted in God. There's an interesting contrast here. In verse 3, he says, "For as the saints in the land, they are the excellent ones in whom is all my delight." That's from the ESV. And then in verse 4 is really the only negative statement in this whole psalm. He says, "Their sorrow shall be multiplied who give gifts to another god. They drink their drink offerings of blood will I never offer, nor take their names upon my lips." The writer is saying, "I will not ever bow down to the gods. You are God, and you I will trust, and I will never bow down to the gods of this world." Can we say that? No, we say it, but again, is it true? Have we not at times, by the way we've lived our lives, bowed down to the gods of this world? Focused too much on the things of this world. Too much time, effort, and money to the things of this world. The Messiah is saying he's going to trust in the Lord. And he's also going to rejoice in the saints. Here's a contrast between the saints in whom he delights and those who chase after false gods. We should delight in the saints. I think Jesus delighted in those who were doing what was right. In the midst of his life, don't you think that Jesus, I know that the disciples at times were would have been a discouragement, an annoyance to him when he taught them over and over, and yet they would get to fussing about who's going to be greatest in the kingdom. And yet at the same time, I believe that they were a joy to him. He knew their hearts. He also knew Judas's heart, but he knew the hearts of the 11. He knew what they were going to become for him. And don't you think there was joy in that for him? Or as he looked around about those women that followed, when he saw Mary Magdalene, out of whom 7 demons had been cast, and how much she loved him. And the other women who prepared for him, Mary and Martha, and how they watched after him, and Lazarus, his good friend, whom he wept at his graveside. Don't you think there was joy in the Lord when he thought about these people, how they loved him and how they cared about him? And the publicans and the sinners that came unto him and wanted a piece of his time. And the woman who had been a prostitute, who was come before him now and was washing his feet with her tears. Don't you think that brought joy to his heart to see the change in people's hearts? The writer says, "As for the saints that are on the earth, they are the excellent in whom I take my delight." I can see Jesus saying that. And shouldn't be that our delight? Our brothers and sisters who encourage us, you're an encouragement to me. I know we're few in number and we would like to have more in these benches. But I'm encouraged every time one of you walks in the door. I told Brother and Sister Sid and Mary Ann tonight when they came in how much I appreciated them being here. It's not easy for them to be here. I know it must be difficult. I've never been their age yet. I probably never will be their age. Looking at the longevity in my family, I probably won't make that. But they're an encouragement to me, them just being here. And Jean being here is an encouragement to me. And Joan's faithfulness, even when her husband is not faithful, is an encouragement to me. And the same for Casey. She's an encouragement to me every time she walks in. And so is Gloria. And so is Mary and what's his name? Leonard. My mind went blank just like Brother Brent's did this morning. And so is Brother Brent. He's an encouragement to you, to me. Think about all his good lessons. Hadn't he been a wonderful blessing to this group since he came and started helping us a year ago? And Leonard, with all of his teasing, he's an encouragement to me. And Bud and Linda, you're a joy. You're a joy. You're kind of crazy, Bud, but you're a joy. And these young folks back here, aren't they an encouragement to us? Now, we need more young folks. And we're thankful for them. And we're thankful for Sister Joyce and Brother Carl, we're just sad that you're going to have to leave us so soon. Because you've been an encouragement to us and your comments at the table today were so excellent. What can I say about Mary and Steve? They are everything around here. Doing everything. And Bonnie, and her love for the truth and her desire to know more about God's Word and her questions, which I can't usually answer. And I won't even begin about my wife and the old farmer and his wife. The psalmist said, as for the saints on the earth, in whom is my delight? You're a delight to me. And each one of you in your own way, what you do around here, and your faith, and your encouragement, and your zeal, and your being here, are a delight to each other. And we should feel that way about each other. And we should appreciate the things that each one and each contribution that each one makes. In the next three verses, we see that Jehovah is our portion. God is my portion. That's what the psalmist says here. He says, Jehovah is my portion, the portion of my inheritance and my cup, in verse 5. It kind of reminds us of what God said to Aaron. In Numbers chapter 18 and verse 20, where the Lord said to Aaron, you have no inheritance in the land. To the Levites, to those who were the priests, they didn't have an inheritance. They didn't get a piece of property. He said, you have no inheritance in the land, neither will you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance. God was their portion. God would take care of them. And God produced a means by which they were taken care of. You, God, are my portion. And he talks about their cup. Jehovah is my portion and mine inheritance, and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. One's cup was the conditions. One's cup and their lot were the conditions they lived in. Psalm chapter 11 talks about the lot of the wicked. And Psalm 23:5, my cup runneth over. Jehovah God is our support. Jehovah God is our maintenance. You maintain my lot. The New American Standard says you support my lot. Holman says you hold my future. The NIV says you have made my lot secure. God makes our future secure. We're not to trust in men. We're not to trust in things. We're not to trust in anything. Then God, who is our support. He says in verse 6, lines are fallen unto me. I have a goodly heritage. Lines were like lot lines. Lines are fallen unto me. I have an inheritance, but it's not an inheritance of a physical lot, a literal lot. It's not a literal home. God is my portion. God is my lot. God is my blessing. In verse 7 he says, I will bless the Lord who gives me counsel. It's God who guides. It's God who gives us our counsel. As we think about the counsel of God today in His Word, it's God who continues to counsel. Jesus had a special relationship with the Father, undoubtedly as His Son. And the hours that he spent in prayer, and the way he leaned upon the Father, and undoubtedly a special communication. But we still have a special communication through prayer and through the Word of God. And God is our counselor. God is our strength. God is our support. And he is the one in whom we are to trust. He is our portion. Where do we put our trust? Do we put it in the things of this world? Do we put it in physical possessions? Do we put it in gold and silver? Do we put it in our IRAs? Do we put it in the inheritance of fathers, our grandfathers? Who is our portion? Who is our portion? God is our portion and our heritage and our cup and our blessing and our counsel. And finally of all, God is our hope. God is our hope. As we said, these verses in particular, verses 8 through 11, are particularly true of the Messiah. But there's some phrases in here that I think we can learn from and that we need to latch on to. Verse 9 in particular, verse 8, I have set the Lord always before me. He is at my right hand. I have set the Lord before me. The idea of someone setting something is intentional. When you say, I set the cup on the counter, it's because you put it there. You intentionally put it there. Although sometimes these days I put things places and then I can't remember where I put them. But still I put them there. I set the Lord always before me. He is at my right hand. That means He is near to me. Yes, Jesus was at the right hand of God. That's not what this is talking about. This phrase just simply means Jesus, the Messiah, is speaking. I have set the Lord always before me. He is at my right hand that I should not be moved. But that's a phrase that should be on our lips as well. We should set God there at our right hand, near to us, that we will not be moved. These ideas are connected. I must intentionally determine I'm going to put God there in my life. Near to me, where He's always there. And if I will put my confidence in Him, He's stronger than any concrete. He's stronger than any glue. He's stronger than anything we can think of in this life. He will be there and He will not move. We can move, but He will not move if we will set Him there. Have we set the Lord there in our lives? Permanently. He's there. Near to us. And we will not be moved. And then he says in verse 9 and 10, therefore, my heart is glad and my glory rejoices. My flesh shall dwell in hope. That's true of us too. Now, verse 10 about not leaving our soul into Sheol and our Holy One will not see corruption. That was true only of Jesus. But verse 9 has an implication for us. My heart is glad and my glory rejoices. Why? Well, in our case, it's because of the fact that God is at our right hand and we will not be moved if we are close to Him, and we have hope and we have assurance through His Word and we have the promise, and because Jesus was raised, we will be raised too. We live in hope. Look at 1 Peter chapter 1 and the lesson will be yours. 1 Peter chapter 1 verses 3 through 9. Let's read it together. And Peter talks about the hope that we have. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His great mercy begat us again into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, into an inheritance that is incorruptible and undefiled and fades not away, reserved in heaven for you, who by the power of God are guarded through faith into a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. Wherein ye greatly rejoice. We can rejoice. The psalmist said in verse 9, my heart is glad and my glory rejoiceth. Peter translates it a little bit differently in Acts chapter 2. But the idea is exactly the same. My heart is glad. My tongue rejoices. My heart rejoices. My spirit rejoices. Why? You're about to face death. Because it's trusted in God. And no matter what we face, whether it be sorrows or trials or temptations or our physical death, cancer, it doesn't matter. If the Lord is at my right hand, I will not be moved. If the Lord is there, if I have set Him there, that He is the one I trust in. He is the one who will protect. He is the one who will guide. He will lead me safely on. I can rejoice no matter what this life deals out to me. Back to Peter, where and we greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, we have been put to grief in manifold trials. They were facing trials, and yet Peter says, we can rejoice that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold that perisheth, though it is proved by fire, may be found unto praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ, whom not having seen ye love, on whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. We can have joy unspeakable. It doesn't matter what the trials are. Oh, I know the people of the world don't understand that. The Christians should. God is at my right hand. I will not be moved. He is set there. And He is my strength. And as I face the challenges and the trials and even death in this life, I look to a home of glory, and I can have that joy knowing it is there because of what Jesus did for me on the cross and the hope that that brings to us who are faithful to Him. Well, the lesson is yours. Thank you for listening. You always listen so well. I appreciate it very much. We offer the Lord's invitation this evening for those who may be without hope right now. If your life is not what it should be, it's without hope. If down deep you know you're not doing what you need to do, or there's something in your life maybe we don't know of that you need help with, that you need the prayers of the saints, the encouragement of the saints at this place, whatever your need is, let that be known tonight while together we stand and sing this song.
Who will follow Jesus?